It's 5 o'clock on a Friday afternoon. My name's Jacob.
Well, I must be Mercedes then. And we're on Community Radio 3CR with Friday Rave. Yep, that's it. It's a Friday Rave. And even though we're just out of it, if you haven't subscribed yet, get online and subscribe. Last month was subscription month, but you still need to do it. We need people to subscribe and say they're subscribing to listen to a Friday Rave. But anyway, we're going to get straight into it, Mercedes.
We are. You're tuned to Community Radio 3CR, of course, always, with a Friday Rave.
But there's so much to talk about today. It's hard to know where to start. I mean, we spoke about the huge US military build-up around Iran over the last week or two, but this is the first Friday Rave since the war broke out last Saturday. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just consumed us so much that it's hard to believe this is the first show. But the war in Iran has many facets, many implications. We could spend the half an hour allotted to us just listing all the various facets and people and machinery in play. But, as we've been known to say on the Rave on the odd occasion in the past, the sole project of global capitalism is to accumulate more and more of the world's wealth into fewer and fewer hands. So it might be a good place to start to talk about the share prices of people like Northrop Grumman, Lockheed Martin and the rest.
And we did mention this in the show last week prior to the first attacks from by US and Israel.
Because that's what it's about. Well, one of the things it's about. But on Monday, last Monday, the first day of trading after the attacks on Saturday, the first day of trading, Northrop Grumman's share price rose 6%. Now, 6% doesn't sound like much, but with total assets of about $51 billion, that amounts to about $3 billion US, so tad under six Australian, say $5.5 Aussie billion dollars. Not bad. Not a tidy day's profit for one day's work. And Lockheed Martin, in contrast, poor old Lockheed Martin, only rose about 3.4%, and that would turn out to be tad under $5 billion Australian for one day's work. But looking at the longer picture, since they signed a deal to quadruple production of the THAAD interceptors in early January, their shares have risen about 40%. So, swings and roundabouts.
And also, I think it'd be worth noting, that's on the first day of trade after the opening.
Yeah.
And the US has said it could go, this war could last anywhere from 3 weeks to 6 weeks, and Trump has just come out to say and said that it's not going to be over until he wants it to be.
Until the fat lady sings. Mm. Until he wants it to be. But, you know, it could go on. I've got a list of the contractors to the Department of War. Boeing, 1%. Raytheon, or RX, they're called now, almost 5%. They all gain between 1% and 5%, all the top tiers. And then your next tiers, your Palantirs, your drone shields.
Mm.
Now, looking at the five-day stock price, some of those share prices have dropped again, but none of them have dropped back to their pre-attack price or below. So the profit's still there. Obviously, immediately the war was announced, people said, buy shares in Lockheed, buy shares. And then that settled down a bit, is always the case. But they're still up above, way up above. And that's right across a range of military companies, and that's relatively easy to find because the EFT database for US Global Technology, Aerospace and Defence Classification, you know what their three-label ticker is?
What is it?
War. W-A-R. They don't mince words.
No.
Only bodies.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not just your big capo share dealers making money. Your super company, your bank, all benefit from the trickle-down, piss-down-the-back-of-your-neck economics of capital's war on Iran. And Polymarket. You've been talking about Polymarket in recent weeks, and how much has been made in Polymarket? It seems a few million dollars were made in the first minutes of the war by people correctly guessing, one would say, having inside knowledge of when the first drops were going to take place.
Yeah, and the disgusting thing is that technically, under financial law, this is not illegal because poly market is a derivatives market, so therefore insider trading is not illegal.
No.
Mm.
Look, I think it's, what can I say? It can only be a good thing to give the average punter an opportunity to share in the seemingly unlimited plunder that's available with the war of Iran.
But these are not your average punters.
They're not your average punter.
They're not your average punters.
Yeah.
So one thing, can I jump in here?
Go for it.
Yeah, yeah. So just on when you were talking about Lockheed Martin's January contract for THAADs, and I want to bring this back into the Australian context, and we know how bullshit the Australian government has been in its response, and of course just, you know, running hand over fist to come out in support of the US and Israel's attacks on Iran. But the production facility that Lockheed Martin opened in Port Wakefield back in December last year, which is making the Guided Multiple Launch Rocket System, or GMLRS, rounds. And so these are launched from HIMARS, and they are definitely confirmed as being used by US ground forces to attack Iran.
Yeah. And Lockheed, by the way, that's their new factory in Port Wakefield, but they've already got their existing factory in Orchard Hills in the suburbs of Sydney. They're already making missiles as well.
They're already making them. So the Port Wakefield facility won't be integrating domestically manufactured components until 2029. So at the moment, it is acting as an assembly plant for the GMLRS kits at a rate of 4,000 annually, which is more than 10 times what Australia, quote, needs for itself. And so according to Lockheed Martin, export has always been a part of the strategy for supply chains. And they add there that they are strengthening sovereign capability, ensuring full compatibility with US inventories.
Yeah, but hang on, 40,000 is more than 10 times Australia needs.
4,000.
Oh, 4,000. Right, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So we need 400 a year. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, I guess. So the kicker is that while the US missile stocks are being depleted so quickly in the latest attack, they need to draw from the supply chain capability that they have been developing here. And that capability that the government blabbers on about isn't, as we've always said, for the Australian military, but to ensure that the capability exists to redirect manufacture and export of US weapons to the US military when it decides to carry out an illegal war on another sovereign country.
Is it illegal?
Well, that's up to the US and Israel to decide, isn't it?
Yeah, we'll get to
that. And just quickly, that brings us to export. And I've got to say here, it does feel really weird and kind of gross to be talking about these details and the impending doom of the US and Israel carpet bombing a country of 90 million people. But as we've talked about on a Friday rave multiple times, Australia's defence export program grants export licences out the wazoo. The figure from the last financial year of estimated export value was around $100 billion. But the framework doesn't have a mechanism to determine actual exports. That's only what the government self-reports through the Arms Trade Treaty, and that's not even legally binding.
No.
So what this means is, in terms of exports, and when we're talking about that, Lockheed Martin, one facility at Port Wakefield, this is not including all of the other defence exporting companies that are involved in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
What this means in the instance of the US rapidly depleting its stocks in an illegal war is that what we're seeing now. So the export permits are already rubber stamped and ready to go for Australia to send armaments that are interoperable, interchangeable and integrated into US inventories. So whenever you hear the term sovereign defence capability, that's what that means.
Yes, and you pointed this out on our show about a year ago now. You've been at the show a year now, mate.
Yeah.
A little bit more, yeah. When we were talking,
just over a year, yeah.
When we were talking about the changes to the arms export controls,
mm-hmm.
You were raising all that. What they're doing is it is filling in forms and rubber stamping everything so that when the US say they need something, it's already pre-approved.
It's pre-approved and they can send it, and there's no mechanism to actually see what Australia is sending because there's no reporting requirements upon actual exports.
Yeah. Disgusting.
Mm-hmm. And so as long as Albanese, Wong and Miles are pledging Australia's support for attacks, despite being unsure of their legality and seemingly to deny that international law isn't something that Australia even need consider, they're being pretty mealy-mouthed about Australia's direct or indirect involvement.
Mm-hmm.
And I might talk about a couple of things that happened in the last few days here. And so...
Excuse me, the whole thing sticks in my throat.
Yeah, the fact is the US couldn't carry out these operations without Australia's involvement. Pine Gap is a starting point in which we all know the Australian government has always claimed that it knows what's going on inside Pine Gap, yet Wong continues to posit that Australia was not privy to the intelligence that the US and Israel used in order to carry out the attacks.
Well, why would you tell her? If you're going to organise something you want to keep secret, I'd tell people that I knew I was going to have some problems with, not people who would just say, yeah, Jake, no worries, Jake, whatever you say, Jake. Why would they tell them?
Yeah, exactly. But it also just says, that does Australia really have a, you know, of course, Penny Wong and Albanese, they've all made a choice.
Yeah.
But this is the same thing with the export, defence export legislation. It's already been put in a process that what mechanism is there to actually change it?
Yeah, they made the choice to put themselves in a position where they have no choice in selling out their country, its resources and its people.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're doing nothing less than that.
That's right. So this morning Albanese announced that three Australian defence personnel were on board the USS Minnesota Virginia-class submarine that torpedoed the IRIS Dina in the Indian Ocean earlier this week. An unarmed Iranian ship.
Coming back from naval exercises in India.
That's right, killing at least 87 on board and leaving them there to die. The rest there to die. Now, this agreement is part of Australian Defence Personnel being on the USS Minnesota is part of the Submarine Rotational Force West, which is all part of AUKUS, which we've talked about on the show a lot. Penny Wong refused to answer the question and said an estimates about whether there were Defence Force personnel on the submarine and claimed that it was a national security issue to speak about specifics of the mission. But alas, Albanese made sure to let us all know that Australian personnel, this is a quote, did not participate in any offensive action.
Got one word to say to you, Anthony Albanese. Bullshit. There are 132 sailors on a Virginia-class submarine, and the Minnesota's a Virginia-class submarine. And of that 132 people, there is no room for three tourists. Now, there's, you know, it's possible, quite likely, in fact, that it wasn't an Australian that pressed a big red button that said kill or launch or whatever it says. But, you know, they were there. They were implicated. They were keeping that submarine going. They were a part of it.
They weren't just there to clog up the plumbing.
They weren't there to fuck spiders.
Yeah. And so, but if we were to take Albanese for his word, which we know we never can, we can all rest easy. But that same submarine, the USS Minnesota, was docked at HMAS Stirling in February last year as a part of the Rotational Force West.
Yes.
And that's not the only visitor Western Australia has had. Of course, there's been many more since then. But on Monday afternoon, two American P-8A Poseidon Maritime Patrol and Reconnaissance planes landed at RAF Base Pierce, just north of Perth, and only alerted the base to their arrival while they were already airborne.
So only when they were looking for somewhere to land.
Yeah, so the Poseidons are the command, control, communications, computers, intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance, and electronic warfare planes, which you might hear is C4ISREW. I love an acronym. And so they flew out of...
These are our nightmares, by the way, dear listener. These kind of words and numbers going through our heads. Don't do it to yourself.
Yeah, nightmares if you can sleep. So the Poseidons flew out of the joint UK-US base, Diego Garcia, in the Indian Ocean on Sunday. We've spoken about Diego Garcia. And as a joint base, the UK have said that, saying, oh, it's only for defensive purposes.
Yeah.
So a quick look at the timeline. Sunday afternoon, US spy planes leave the basin in the Indian Ocean. They arrive on Monday at RAF Base Pierce. On Wednesday, the USS Minnesota torpedoes an Iranian warship in the Indian Ocean that had made no secrets about its whereabouts. So some might say that the reconnaissance missions of these planes was to relay information to the Harold E. Holt Naval Communications Base at Northwest Cape in Western Australia to send intelligence to the USS Minnesota, which we all know comes from the Harold Holt Base.
Yep.
You could also say that given Iran Iran's very forthright strategy about attacking US and Israeli bases and bases of anyone who assists in the attacks on Iran, that perhaps the planes arrive to provide greater surveillance and reconnaissance capabilities. And let's not forget, they also have firepower.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. In the case that Iran want to attack the Harold Holt base, as it is an integral to the US naval intelligence targeting and was definitely integral to the sinking of the IRIS Dina. But again, if you were to listen to our leaders, who says that Australia has had no direct involvement? And we should all just believe Albo when he says that we need to turn the temperature down. And we don't want to bring the wars here.
We want to turn the temperature down. And we're going to turn temperature down by arming and providing with information and sailors to the United States military to attack another country. Now, regardless of what you think of Iran, and I'm no fan of it, it was an illegal attack. It was an illegal attack anyway.
And that's not to mention the 100 soldiers that were at the base in the UAE. Currently, yep. There's Operation Hydrant, Operation Manitou in the area. And Bahrain.
Yeah, they're everywhere. Australian troops are everywhere embedded with US forces.
And I think that's a really important thing to listen to when Albanese Wong and what's his name, that other fella,
the dick from Geelong.
Yep. When they say, like, they're using very, very sly language in the way that they're talking about these operations and Australia's involvement, and that's what we really have to take note of.
Yeah, absolutely. Orwellian speak almost.
Oh, yeah.
I want to talk about another aspect of it. Can I do that? An aspect that's been just playing on my mind a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Because go for it.
It's been playing on my mind for years, but very few of us speak about it. And it came to the fore of my mind recently because the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, a US mob that advocates for the separation of church and state in the US military, have apparently received over 500 complaints from non-commissioned officers in the US about their military commanders framing the attack on Iran as, and I quote, all part of God's divine plan, unquote. One complaint, signed by no fewer than 15 people at a briefing, claimed that the briefing included quotes from the Book of Revelation, which is like, must have been written on acid, along with the notion, and I've got a quote again, to quote, President Donald Trump was anointed by Jesus to light the signal fire in Iran to cause Armageddon and mark his return to Earth.
That's a quote.
That's the quote. This is what they're saying. This is what the commanders are telling their non-commissioned officers to tell their troops. And these guys are saying, I'm not telling my people that.
Yeah.
And disregarding orders. Now, I know that's not official policy. But what is official policy is the Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, leading fundamentalist prayer sessions at the Pentagon that spout the same sort of Christian Zionist crap. And that's what happens, folks, when you take religious funding seriously. You get a crazy Jesus-jumper nuclear-armed Secretary of War launching a campaign to kill a crazy mullah who was, look, we on the left should stop shying away from saying this. This bloke was oppressing the Iranian people with similar claptrap about what his God wants, and all this is being done in a weirdly buggered-up way that only religion can come up with, because a government of Jewish fundamentalists claim that their God, who apparently is the same bloke as the Islamic God and the Christian God, I mean, they all agree on that at least, their God gave the entirety of the Middle East to one of their great-great-great ad infinitum grandfathers for all eternity, forever. It's ours because God gave it to Abraham. And if thousands, possibly, millions potentially of people have to suffer and die, starting with 160 girls while they're at school, well, that's that, and no argument can be entered into because that my friends and other listeners, would be hate speech. And seriously, if you told me 30 years ago that the peak leaders of countries at war would be using this kind of utter woo-woo bullshit of whose God is the biggest and bestest, I wouldn't have believed it. That's where we've got to. And yet, it's not just them. There'll be people out there amongst you, listeners, in 2026 who are already uncomfortable with me even saying this because in another weirdly stuffed up way that I don't know who first came up with, it's a crime for me or anyone else to question another person's belief systems. You know it. You can feel it as soon as I refer to the crazy mullah or the Jesus jumper or the fundamentalist Jewish government of the state of Israel. You feel uncomfortable because that has got a bad name. And it's almost like they're taking Pastor Niemöller's famous, you know, first they came for the communist statement, and reversing it. We can't say anything about anyone because that gives people the right to say whatever they want about us. It's ridiculous. And for mine, the sooner all the priests, pastors, rabbis, mullahs, and all the rest of them who use these spiritual justifications to kill, maim, and rape people, all I can hope is that they get to meet their gods. The sooner, the better.
Well, where does that...
That's my two bobs worth.
That's your two bobs worth. A bit more than two bobs, but we've only got a few minutes
and
left
look,
here.
On that, I've got to say, but it's not about religion. We all know it's not about religion. It's about money. They're using religion.
Yes.
They're using it as a justification, and everyone knows it's bullshit, but no one can say it's bullshit. No one can say, your God doesn't exist, my friend. No one's allowed to say that anymore. But, you know, it's not even about human rights.
Or using religion as an argument for capital also just undermines faith and belief of people who don't use that to go about their daily lives in, you know.
Absolutely. Drives me mad. I mean, you know, one of the whole narratives, just because I mentioned human rights, one of the narratives that they use to get everybody to hate on Iran in the first place is that they treat their women and girls like shit with no rights. And to some extent, I'm sure that's true. Probably
that's
even
true with every society. As we're coming up to International Working Women's Day, that's exactly what we're going to be talking about.
Took the words out of my mouth. I was going to say probably even possibly worse than we do here. You know, I mean, how much worse can you get with the leader of the free world, Donald Trump and Prince Andrew and all the rest of them on Epstein's Island? Come on. You know, and one of the first things we do, because they're so bad to their women and girls, is we bomb a school of 160 girls in the lead up to International Women's Day, as you put so rightly. And then...
And that's to come after the murder of over 60,000 kids
in Palestine, in Gaza.
Men, women, children,
everyone.
over hundreds of thousands of people.
But then to have Penny Wong, that outspoken, utter hero of women's rights. I want everybody to listen to her International Women's Day speech this Sunday because she'll make one somewhere at some sycophant's cocktail party balls up. Yeah, she'll be making one. And when she's making one, think of that. Penny Wong tells us that it's not up to her to say whether killing these young girls while they're at school is even legal or not.
Mm.
She says that's up to Israel and the United States, up to religious puppy fingerers like Pete Hegseth and Israel Katz to determine. Israel Katz is still the Minister of Defence, isn't he? To determine whether it's legal or not, apparently.
And the bombing of 13 hospitals. So far.
So the bottom line, all I can say to you people, is you know it's bullshit. You know Albanese and Wong and that dick from Geelong don't represent you. They're not acting in your best interests. They're doing whatever they need to do to keep the United States and global capital happy with what they're doing.
And they will extend the timelines as long as those people that line their pockets and whose pockets they line say, okay, that's okay, or until Israel finally wants to pursue its goal of greater Israel. Because that's a massive part of this. You know, they've sent evacuation in southern Lebanon. Evacuation was in southern Lebanon and started bombing South Beirut.
Yeah, and they're doing it not because God told them to or God gave it to them. They're using that as an excuse. They're doing it for the mineral rights. They're doing it for the mining. They're doing it for the land. They're doing it for the geopolitics. They're doing it to make money. But our leaders here, they're not leaders. They're just middle management. They're not even decision makers. Wong said it herself. She can't comment. Albanese came out and confirmed, as you said, that three Australians are in the Minnesota, SSN Minnesota. And he only said it today, 2 days after the rest of us started saying it, because he's only been given the clearance to say it today. The United States ambassador would have gone to, he wouldn't have gone to visit Albo. Albo would have called Albo into his office and given him his speaking notes of what to say. And he says, there's a framework that ensures that even though we're on a nuclear attack submarine, we won't take part in any hostilities. I'm sure Albo believes it when all those people tell him that they were just on Epstein's islands for a pina colada.
And they will keep jumping over the same way that the US and Israel have changed so many times about why, you know, it's nuclear capable. And Australia is still running this line that Iran can never have a nuclear weapon.
But Israel can.
But the Omani negotiators have said that there was, upon the terms of the negotiations, that it was accepted prior to the attack on Saturday, but also on the premise that apparently the 12-day war obliterated Iran's nuclear capability.
That's what Trump told us, and no reason to doubt him. But then the other thing is Al-Khamenei, he issued a fatwa we're against nuclear weapons. Now, you know, as I said, I don't want him to issue a fatwa and say you can't have nuclear weapons because God said you can't have them. I want him to say, you know, stand up for yourselves. Nuclear weapons are immoral. And that's why we're not having them. But nonetheless, he was anti-nukes. And the bloke that's now in charge is one of the pro-nukes that been fought with him for years to get nuclear weapons.
And Trump now wants to say that the next leader of Iran can't be chosen without his involvement, without the US involvement.
We're out of time.
We're out of time.
You know the drill.
Yeah.